You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
I'm so excited because the first book by Darkness Prevails and Carmen Carrion is available for pre-order right now. It's the Freaky Folklore Compendium, filled with the history and lore of the most terrifying folklore monsters across the globe, alongside some cool but creepy illustrations. Releases July 16th. Pre-order now at eeriecast.com/freak or on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and your favorite bookstore.
A penitentiary, in its essence, is a place of punishment and rehabilitation, a stark symbol of society's efforts to correct wrongdoing and enforce justice. It's a place where the echoes of past transgressions reverberate through its cold stone corridors, and where the weight of guilt and regret hangs heavy in the air. The very word penitentiary evokes images of confinement and solitude, of inmates grappling with their demons in the shadows of their cells. Among these shadows lurk the whispered tales of restless spirits, the ghosts of inmates long departed, but whose presence lingers, haunting the penitentiary halls, with their unresolved anguish and unfulfilled yearnings. Their spectral whispers seem to echo through the darkness. Welcome to Destination Terror, your passport to the scariest places in the world. From haunted hotels to locations of unexplained creature sightings, and now places that we only visit in our imagination. We will travel to places that will provide excitement, adventure, and horror. Today we're visiting Eastern State Penitentiary, the first penitentiary in American history, with a dark past and a haunted present. So if you're into travel and all things scary, listen close and you might just discover your next exciting adventure destination, but hopefully not your final destination. Destination Terror is an Eeriecast original podcast hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. If you would like to send us a suggestion or submit a story with your own experience, you can email them to carmencarrion@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter @carmencarrion. If you enjoy the show, please follow and rate Destination Terror on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. Also, check out eeriecast.com for more scary podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, the podcast where together we explore horrifying legends across the world and tell terrifying tales of monsters both ancient and modern. Carly stood in the school parking lot, eyeing the three lined up buses with disdain. She detested school buses, but the prospect of visiting another dirty, abandoned building for a history field trip was even worse. It seemed like her teachers were obsessed with exploring these decrepit relics of the past. The only silver lining in this trip was that it meant she would escape several of her boring classes for the rest of the school day. She sighed, resigned to the fact that she had no choice but to board one of those dreaded buses and endure yet another historical excursion. Carly was standing in line, appearing remarkably patient, when suddenly her best friend Lainey spotted her amidst the crowd. "I've been searching everywhere for you. I thought you called in sick and ditched me," Lainey exclaimed breathlessly, grabbing Carly's arm and squeezing her way into the line alongside her. With an exaggerated eye roll, Carly replied to Lainey, "Lainey, I've been right here, where I was supposed to be ever since the bell rang. The question is, where have you been?" "I was talking to Chris. You know, the new kid with the blonde highlights. I wanted to make my move before anyone else did," she finished with a giggle. "Of course you did." Carly should have known that was where her friend had been. No boy with a decent haircut and a cute smile was safe from Lainey. "So, do you think I should act scared or brave during the field trip to get his attention? You know, some guys like the weaker acting girls, and others seem to like the strong type. What type do you think Chris likes? Here we go, Carly thought. This is going to be all she talks about if I don't change the subject. I think you should be yourself, silly. By the way, do you think this place is going to be gross? I didn't exactly dress for roughing it in a decaying old prison. Carly was looking over her cute new jumper as she spoke. You've never been to the ESP? Lainey asked, seemingly shocked. Girl, this place is so creepy that being afraid may not be an act. They say that thousands of people were tortured to death in that place. I went there last summer with my dad. He thought it would be a cool place to take us for his weekend. This time, Lainey rolled her eyes. Their chatter was cut short when Mr. Norwal, the head history teacher, blew his whistle. Lainey grabbed onto the back of Carly's jumper to make sure they weren't separated. As they loaded the bus, Carly grabbed a seat by the window and Lainey quickly joined her. They were quiet for most of the way there, while Mr. Norwal went over the itinerary and rules for the day. As the bus rumbled along towards the Eastern State Penitentiary, Carly glanced out the window, watching the familiar streets give way to unfamiliar surroundings. She began to feel anticipation, and Lainey shared some of the things she had learned about the prison, many of them enough to make Carly's stomach churn. Lainey seemed unfazed. I can't wait. Maybe we'll have a paranormal experience. That would be sick. Carly agreed it would be sick, but not in the same way that Lainey used the word. Carly had never liked scary stories, so the idea of visiting a place that had true scary stories wasn't exactly her idea of fun. Sometimes they used devices to punish the prisoners. There was this one guy who got punished just for trying to talk to another prisoner. They put a thing called the iron gag on him, and they say his mouth got all cut up, and he swallowed so much blood that it made him vomit. But the vomit had nowhere to go, so he choked to death on it. And then there was... That's enough, Lainey, Carly interjected, her voice strained. If you keep it up, I'm going to vomit. The image of the prisoner choking on his own blood and vomit was too much for Carly to bear. Carly fell silent, turning to stare out the window in an attempt to shake off the disturbing images. She took a deep breath, trying to calm her nerves, as the bus approached their destination. The imposing silhouette of Eastern State Penitentiary looming ahead.
A supportive work environment can help everyone working in schools stay resilient.
Just finding people that can reassure me that I'm doing my best and that there are people out there who understand me and can help me through these situations.
You are not alone.
Leaning on each other, colleagues in education is essential. You have to.
We take care of one another.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now. That's cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
Eastern State Penitentiary, once known as the most renowned and costly prison globally, now stands in ruins, a haunting landscape of deteriorating cell blocks and vacant guard towers. Throughout its extensive history, its vaulted skylit cells confined nearly 85,000 individuals, including infamous figures such as bank robber Slick Willie Sutton and Scarface Al Capone. In 1787, just 4 years following the American Revolutionary War, the United States was teeming with potential, and nowhere was this enthusiasm felt more than in Philadelphia. At Independence Hall, notable figures like Alexander Hamilton and James Madison convened to draft what would evolve into the Constitution. Simultaneously, a short distance from Independence Hall, at Benjamin Franklin's residence, another assembly of community leaders met to deliberate a distinct issue, the reform of prisons. The conditions at Walnut Street Jail, situated directly behind Independence Hall, were deplorable. Men, women, adults, and children, ranging from thieves to murderers, were confined together in filthy, disease-ridden cells where rape and robbery were rampant. Jailers showed little regard for the safety of the inmates, instead profiting by selling them alcohol, sometimes up to nearly 20 gallons a day. Basic necessities like food, warmth, and clothing were provided at a cost, and it was not uncommon for prisoners to die due to cold and hunger. A group of concerned citizens, known as the Philadelphia Society for Alleviating the Miseries of Public Prisons, determined that this state of affairs could not persist. Their proposed reforms not only laid the groundwork for prison reform in Pennsylvania, but also had a profound impact on efforts worldwide. Pennsylvania, from its inception, set itself apart from other colonies under the influence of founder William Penn's Quaker principles. Unlike many British North American colonies, where a strict criminal code imposed death penalties for offenses such as blasphemy, kidnapping, and sodomy, Penn favored imprisonment with labor and fines for most crimes, reserving death as punishment solely for murder. However, after Penn's death in 1718, conservative factions discarded his Quaker-based approach and adopted the harsher punitive practices prevalent elsewhere. Consequently, jails in Pennsylvania merely served as holding facilities for offenders awaiting corporal or capital punishment. It wouldn't be until 70 years later that efforts to reform this severe penal system would begin. Dr. Benjamin Rush was a notable Philadelphia physician deeply involved in politics. In 1776, he represented Pennsylvania in the Second Continental Congress and signed the Declaration of Independence. Over a decade later, he played a leading role in advocating for the ratification of the federal Constitution. Known for his outspoken advocacy against slavery, he was later recognized as the father of American psychiatry for his groundbreaking studies on mental illnesses. While training as a young doctor in London in 1768, Rush met Benjamin Franklin. Then serving as an agent to Parliament for the Pennsylvania Assembly, Franklin, renowned among the Parisian circles, encouraged the curious 22-year-old to venture across the English Channel and immerse himself in the Enlightenment ideas flourishing in French salons. The following year, Rush took Franklin's advice and engaged with scientists, philosophers, and intellectuals, absorbing progressive European theories on subjects like crime and punishment, which would eventually influence his work in America. In 1787, Rush reunited with Franklin and other American thinkers to advocate for sweeping changes, not only at the Walnut Street Jail, but globally. He believed that crime stemmed from a moral disease and proposed a house of repentance, where inmates could reflect on their actions, experience spiritual remorse, and undergo rehabilitation. This approach later became known as the Pennsylvania System, with the institution referred to as a penitentiary. The Philadelphia Society for Alleviating the Miseries of Public Prisons, also known as the Pennsylvania Prison Society, supported this idea and sought to persuade the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. While improvements were made at the Walnut Street Jail, such as segregating inmates by gender and offense, implementing vocational workshops, and ending abusive practices, they fell short. Philadelphia's population and crime rates were skyrocketing, necessitating a larger facility to fulfill the society's mission. True repentance, they believed, required complete isolation for each prisoner, which was unattainable in the overcrowded existing jails. The construction of Eastern State Penitentiary commenced in 1822 on a cherry orchard outside Philadelphia. The unique design, conceived by British-born architect John Haviland, featured seven wings of solitary cell blocks radiating from a central hub. Although the penitentiary opened in 1829, 7 years before its completion, it was a marvel of technology. Each private cell boasted central heating, flush toilets, and shower baths, luxuries not even available at the White House during President Andrew Jackson's tenure. But this was no Hilton Hotel. The goal was to force isolation so the prisoners could truly think about what they had done and fill their hearts with penitence. The Quakers thought that any unnecessary contact could derail the rehabilitation process. To make sure that didn't happen, they created masks to put over prisoners' heads so they wouldn't be able to communicate with or see any of their fellow inmates. Imagine, you're a few months into your sentence in 1834, and you can't bear keeping your mouth shut a moment longer. That's how inmate Matthias McCumsey may have felt in 1833. While he was serving time for manslaughter, McCumsey tried to talk to his neighbor. When he got caught by the guards, they slapped the iron gag on him. To do this, they bound and shackled his hands behind his back. They put an iron-casted gag over his tongue. The gag was attached by chains to the shackles on his wrists. Then they left him. 1 hour later, he was found dead in his cell. Well, apparently, the iron collar ripped up his tongue, and McCumsey bled to death. The prisoners' rooms were fitted with feed doors, so they could eat their 3 square meals a day in total isolation. Guards wore fabric over their shoes so prisoners wouldn't hear their footsteps. And the prisoners, not allowed to speak, sat in complete silence for most of the day. The only book they could read was the Bible. The only light in their cells came from an Eye of God skylight above. Letters from home and visitors were not allowed. If prisoners tried to tap on pipes or whisper to each other through vents, the consequences were severe. Charles Williams, a farmer convicted of theft and sentenced to 2 years, was the first inmate of Eastern State Penitentiary. On October 3, 1829, Williams entered the prison wearing a hood over his eyes to protect his identity for future reintegration into society. The hood also prevented any opportunity for escape, ensuring that Williams would never see beyond his individual cell. Communication with guards was limited to the small feeding hole. He and other future inmates lived in complete isolation, with only the Bible and assigned tasks like shoemaking and weaving to occupy their time. The Pennsylvania system implemented at Eastern State Penitentiary drew global attention, with delegates from various countries studying its principles. Alex de Tocqueville praised the concept during his 1831 visit, emphasizing the transformative power of solitude that leads a prisoner from reflection to remorse, then to hope, and ultimately to industriousness. This model inspired more than 300 prisons worldwide, from Europe to South America, Russia, China, and Japan. However, not everyone was convinced of its effectiveness. Charles Dickens, after visiting in 1842, criticized the system for its perceived ignorance of the psychological harm caused by prolonged isolation. Dickens' skepticism eventually proved prophetic. Many prisoners experienced severe psychological distress due to prolonged isolation. The lack of social interaction, sensory deprivation, and confinement to small, dimly lit cells led to feelings of loneliness, anxiety, and despair. Extended periods of solitary confinement often resulted in the deterioration of mental health. Prisoners developed symptoms of depression, paranoia, and hallucinations. Some individuals experienced acute episodes of psychosis or suicidal thoughts. Isolation prevented prisoners from maintaining normal social skills and interactions. Upon release, many struggled to reintegrate into society and form meaningful relationships. The harsh conditions of isolation, combined with limited physical activity and poor nutrition, contributed to physical health decline. Many inmates suffered from weakened immune systems, chronic illnesses, and overall deterioration of health. Instead of fostering genuine penitence and reform, solitary isolation often led to increased bitterness, resentment, and a sense of hopelessness among inmates. Rehabilitation efforts were hindered by the adverse effects of isolation. Out of the thousands of prisoners that were unfortunate enough to grace the corridors of Eastern State Penitentiary, there were some that are remembered more than others. Perhaps America's most notorious gangster of the 20th century, Al Scarface Capone, spent his first ever prison spell at Eastern State Penitentiary, where he was incarcerated for 7 months in 1929 to 1930, after being found guilty of carrying and concealing a deadly weapon. Willie Sutton is one of America's most famous bank robbers. he developed a reputation for being something of a gentleman thief, robbing only the rich and never killing anyone during his robberies. He was friends with some of the leading mafia members of the day, many of whom enjoyed Sutton's company socially, as well as purely for business reasons. He was imprisoned in Eastern State Penitentiary in 1934 after the machine gun robbery of the Corn Exchange Bank, sentenced to serve between 25 and 50 years there. 11 years into his sentence, he escaped, along with 11 other convicts, through a tunnel dug 100 feet underground. They were caught almost immediately, having broken out in broad daylight. Leo Callahan was the only inmate to successfully escape Eastern State Penitentiary out of well over 100 who tried. Incarcerated for assault and battery with intent to kill, Callahan and five other inmates scaled the 30-foot east wall of the prison with a homemade ladder. They escaped, but Callahan's five accomplices were all captured and brought back to the prison. Callahan remains the only inmate who escaped Eastern State Penitentiary and got away with it. He never resurfaced and was never caught, making him technically still at large. Legend has it that there was even a dog that was condemned to life in Eastern State Penitentiary. The year was 1924, when Pep, the Black Labrador, was sentenced to a lifetime behind bars and would forever be branded a killer for the brutal murder of the then-Governor Gifford Pinchow's cat. On August 12, 1924, Pep was taken into custody at the Eastern State Penitentiary, where he was given an identification number, prisoner C2559, and had his mugshot taken, just like all the other prisoners. He settled in to serve his sentence, life without parole. Well, that's how the story goes anyway, but that's not the true story. In reality, a newspaper reporter, eager to make an impression, made the whole thing up. Pep did actually belong to the governor, and was a gift from his relatives who bred labs. But Pep's only true crime was murdering the governor's sofa cushions. But that story didn't sell papers, so they added the cat's murder. Pep really did live out his life at Eastern State Penitentiary, but not as a prisoner. Instead, he served as a mascot for the prisoners, according to Governor Pinchow, who was friends with the warden, and gave Pep to the prison as a companion for the prisoners. The governor felt that dogs could be therapeutic for inmates, and thought Pep to be the perfect candidate. It worked like a charm. The prisoners immediately took to Pep, and nicknamed him Pep the Black. The beloved Pep gave company and comfort to those in need for the rest of his days. In 1913, Eastern State Penitentiary abandoned the Pennsylvania system of isolation and penitence. Prisoners began sharing cells, working together, and engaging in organized sports. The solitary confinement model became unsustainable due to the technological limitations of the early 19th century, and collapsed under the weight of its lofty moral ideals. Also, the rapid growth of Philadelphia led to severe overcrowding by the 1920s, forcing the construction of more cells, including subterranean units without windows, light, or plumbing. Ultimately, solitude ceased to symbolize redemption, and instead became synonymous with punishment. By the 1960s, Eastern State Penitentiary was deteriorating rapidly. In 1971, the state of Pennsylvania officially shuttered the facility. The severe punishments inflicted upon inmates are chilling, even without supernatural encounters. Among them were methods like the water bath, where prisoners were submerged and then exposed to icy walls in winter until ice formed on their skin. If you broke the rules during the winter, you could be subjected to another horrific punishment. A guard would dunk your head in ice-cold water, then hang you on a wall all night. The frigid air would cause your skin to ice over before morning, and many didn't make it through. Early Philadelphia doctors believed that mental illness spread through the body through circulation. They thought they could cure insanity by simply making sure blood couldn't pump through the body. The best way to do this? Restricting all movement. The mad chair was then created, so the inmates could be strapped in so tightly it was literally impossible to move a muscle. They would be forced to sit in this chair for days without food, restricting the blood flow inevitably, cause damage to the body, and inmates often needed limbs amputated after spending time in the mad chair. And then there was the hole, an underground cell devoid of light, human contact, exercise, adequate food, air, or sanitation. It's a good thing that the penitentiary closed in 1971, but it's sad that so many suffered inhumanely before it did. It is now widely regarded as one of America's most haunted locations and has been featured on television programs like Ghost Adventures, Most Haunted Live, Ghost Hunters, and Fear. Each year, numerous paranormal researchers visit and report significant otherworldly activities. Countless visitors, staff, guards, and former inmates have shared eerie experiences dating back to the 1940s that corroborate each other's stories. Distinct areas within the prison are associated with specific paranormal phenomena. Cell Block 12 with echoing voices and laughter. Cell Block 6 with shadowy figures darting along walls. And Cell Block 4 with apparitions of ghostly faces. Many have also claimed to witness the silhouette of a guard in one of the towers, along with footsteps, wails, and whispers repeatedly reported across different accounts. One famous account comes from Gary Johnson, responsible for maintaining the aging locks at the prison. In the early 1990s, while opening an old lock in Cell Block 4, he described being gripped by an inexplicable force that immobilized him. Johnson recounted feeling a palpable malevolent energy emanating from the cell, with tormented faces appearing on the walls, and a particular figure beckoning to him. A tale symbolic of the ongoing mystique surrounding Eastern State Penitentiary. Recognized as a National Historic Landmark in 1965, the prison was repurposed as a historic site and opened to tourists in 1994. Today, visitors, not inmates, explore the neo-Gothic architecture, walking beneath vaulted ceilings and skylights that once symbolized the lofty moral aspirations of America's founding fathers. Eastern State Penitentiary, characterized by its imposing stone walls, decaying corridors, and stark cells that once held numerous hardened criminals, presents an eerie appearance, suggestive of haunting. Its 142-year history is steeped in tales of suicide, insanity, disease, homicide, and brutality, fostering an atmosphere where one can easily envision lingering spirits of troubled souls wandering in deserted halls. The Eastern State Penitentiary Historic Site is situated at 22nd Street and Fairmount Avenue, only 5 blocks away from the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Currently, the penitentiary is open from Wednesday through Monday, operating from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Please note that they are closed on Tuesdays and during a few holidays. Tickets can be purchased online at their website or at the door. The haunting legacy of Eastern State Penitentiary continues to captivate and mystify visitors, researchers, and those drawn to the paranormal. The chilling accounts of supernatural encounters within its walls, coupled with its grim history of suffering and despair, leave a permanent mark on all who dare to explore its forsaken corridors. As the echoes of voices from the past linger, and shadowy figures weave their way in and out of decayed cell blocks, Eastern State Penitentiary stands as a solemn reminder of the darker aspects of human existence, and perhaps of the enduring mysteries that lie beyond our understanding. As the bus pulled up to Eastern State Penitentiary, Carly took a deep breath to steady herself. The sight of the massive stone walls and imposing exterior reminded her of a medieval stone castle. Lainey, still visibly excited, nudged Carly with a grin. Huge towers flanked the massive entrance, and a 30-foot stone wall a half mile long surrounded the prison. "Look at this place. It's like a fortress, isn't it?" Lainey exclaimed, her eyes wide with excitement. Carly glanced up at the huge towers that flanked the massive entrance. "Yeah, it's impressive," Carly replied, her voice slightly shaky. Mr. Norwal led the group off the bus, and they gathered near the entrance as he began explaining the history of Eastern State Penitentiary. Lainey listened attentively, but Carly couldn't shake the feeling of unease as she stared at the fortress-like structure before her. As they approached the entrance gates, a cold breeze seemed to sweep through the air. She glanced at Lainey, who was practically bouncing with excitement, oblivious to Carly's growing case of nerves. The heavy wooden gates creaked open, and the group entered the prison grounds. Carly hesitated, feeling as if the stone walls would close in around her. The air inside the prison carried a musty and oppressive odor that overwhelmed her senses. It was a combination of dampness, decay, and decades-old dust lingering in the air. The faint scent of mildew clung to the stone walls from the years of neglect and abandonment. Underlying it all was a metallic tang, reminiscent of old iron and rust, perhaps a lingering echo of the prison's grim history of punishment and suffering. The smell seemed to seep into Carly's clothes and hair, despite her efforts to breathe shallowly and avoid inhaling too deeply. The overwhelming odor seemed to linger. Their group was joined by a tour guide, a tall, spindly man who looked every bit the part of a historian. He greeted first Mr. Norwal, and then the class as a whole. "Welcome to Eastern State Penitentiary. I am Herman Franklin, possibly even a relation to the infamous Benjamin Franklin. As your guide, I shall unravel the mysteries of this historic and haunting site. Join me as we travel through time, as we delve into the captivating history of one of the most intriguing penal institutions in the world." Lainey leaned in, her voice barely a whisper.
"Cheesy,"
she remarked, followed by a stifled cough. Carly ignored her as she surveyed their surroundings. Her first impression of the prison was made as they entered cell block 1. She wondered how anyone had survived this kind of life. A cavernous vaulted hallway stretched out before them, dotted with doors on both sides, their height seemingly made for dwarves. The size would have forced the inmates to duck, slowing them down if there was a riot or attempt to escape, or so their guide informed them. The high ceilings in certain areas made the building feel open and airy, but the stone walls, exposed pipes, and institutional lighting that was fittingly oppressive. The only cell they saw that didn't look like it was formed as a perfect model, straight from the bowels of hell, was Al Capone's cell. The whole room was suffused in the glow of a desk lamp, which stood on a polished desk. On the once grim walls of the penal chamber hung tasteful paintings, and the strains of a waltz were being emitted by a powerful cabinet radio receiver of antique design and fine finish. Distracted by the haunting melody drifting through the air, and lost in contemplation of Al Capone's fortune to have stayed in luxury compared to the other prisoners, Carly hadn't realized she was falling behind the rest of the class until Lainey looped back to retrieve her. As Carly and Lainey lagged behind, they were drawn deeper into the eerie atmosphere and found, moments later, that they had been completely separated from the group. They tried to find their way back, rushing in the last direction they had seen their classmates, but as the echoes of their footsteps seemed to grow louder, their unease grew heavier. Suddenly, a door creaked open ahead of them, revealing a dimly lit hallway stretching into darkness. Lainey, not easily scared, urged Carly to follow her, but as they walked further, the shadows seemed to close in around them. Their footsteps faltered as they stumbled upon a cell block that looked forgotten. Carly's heart raced as she glanced around, her senses on high alert as her heart pounded loudly in her ears. Was that a whisper in the shadows? A flicker of movement in the corner of her eye? "Hey, look at this," Lainey called out, her voice echoing faintly in the corridor. Carly's heart nearly stopped when she saw Lainey stepping into one of the cells. "Lainey, wait! Don't go in there!" she exclaimed, her voice tinged with panic. Lainey, you shouldn't be in there. Carly protested, her voice trembling, as she hesitated at the threshold of the dimly lit cell. Ignoring Carly's warning, Lainey stepped further into the cell, her curiosity overriding any sense of caution. Come on, Carly, you've got to see this, she called back, her voice filled with excitement. Carly hovered anxiously in the doorway, refusing to step inside. What are you looking at? She asked, her voice a mixture of concern and anxiousness. Carly's stomach churned as she peered into the cell, her eyes widening at the sight before her. It looks like blood on the wall. Do you think it's real? Lainey whispered, her voice barely above a murmur. Lainey was examining the marks on the wall, her expression full of fascination. Could this be where a couple of prisoners got into a fight? Or maybe some poor fool flipped his wig, she speculated. Heart pounding, Carly finally stepped into the cell, fully intending to drag Lainey out. But before she could reach her friend, the heavy door slammed shut behind her with a resounding thud. Carly's eyes widened in horror as she ran back to the door, but the sound of the door locking echoed ominously in the confined space. Panic surged through her veins as she frantically tried to push the door open, but it remained stubbornly shut. Lainey! Lainey, we're locked in! Carly cried out. As Carly's panicked cries echoed through the cell, they were met with an eerie silence, broken only by the faint sound of whispers drifting through the air. Lainey's eyes widened in terror as she watched the movement of a shadowy figure in the corner of the room, its form shifting and undulating in the dim light. Carly, do you hear that? Lainey whispered, her voice trembling, as the whispers grew louder, filling the cramped space. Before Carly could respond, a sudden gust of icy wind swept through the cell, sending prickling goosebumps across her skin. She froze in terror as she felt the unmistakable sensation of cold fingers graze her neck, sending a chill coursing through her veins. With a blood-curdling scream, Carly stumbled backward, her heart pounding in her chest as she stared wide-eyed at the shadowy figure looming before her. Lainey, we have to get out of here, she cried, as she fought complete hysteria. In a frenzied panic, both girls began pounding on the heavy door, their screams for help echoing through the corridors. Help somebody, help us! Carly's voice cracked with desperation as she hammered her fists against the unyielding metal. Lainey joined in, her cries merging with Carly's in a desperate chorus of fear. Please, anyone, we're trapped in here! As Carly and Lainey continued to pound on the door, their screams echoing through the cell, their worst fears were realized when the dark shadow figure in the corner of the room was joined by another, and then the stain on the wall began to seep and grow until a crimson pool began to form on the floor. Looming ominously in the dim light, the shadowy figures continued to multiply, their forms twisting and contorting in the darkness. Carly's breath caught in her throat as she watched, paralyzed with fear, while Lainey's eyes widened in terror. With the weight of their backs pressed against the door, Carly and Lainey braced themselves for the worst, expecting the shadows to engulf them at any moment. But, to their astonishment, the door suddenly swung open, and they tumbled out into the corridor in a heap, gasping for breath and trembling with relief. As they struggled to regain their composure, their eyes fell upon a friendly black dog standing before them, its tail wagging eagerly and its tongue hanging out in a canine grin. For a moment, they simply stared in disbelief, unsure if they were hallucinating or if their ordeal was finally over. But as the dog bounded forward, nuzzling against them affectionately, Carly and Lainey felt a rush of warmth flood their hearts. The dog began to back away and let out a series of urgent barks, as if urging them to follow him. Sensing an opportunity for escape, Carly and Lainey exchanged a hesitant glance before cautiously trailing after the dog as it bounded down the corridor. With each step, the dog led them further into the prison, its barks echoing off the stone walls. Despite their fear, Carly and Lainey felt a glimmer of hope stirring within them as they followed their unlikely guide through the darkened hallways. Finally, the dog led them straight to their group, where their classmates and teacher were anxiously awaiting their return. But as Carly and Lainey rejoined the group, they realized that the dog was gone and that no one else had seen it. They were the only ones who had witnessed its presence. Confused and shaken, Carly and Lainey recounted their eerie experience to the tour guide and their teacher, hoping for some explanation. To their surprise, the tour guide chuckled and exchanged knowing glances with the teacher. "You must have been saved by the legendary Pep," the tour guide declared with a smile. "It's said that his spirit still roams these halls. It's a good thing he found you before anything worse happened." Carly and Lainey exchanged glances, their minds reeling with the realization that they had found a ghostly guardian during their terrifying encounter. As they listened to the tour guide's tales of Pep's legendary exploits during his time in the prison, they felt a sense of awe and wonder wash over them, knowing that they had an actual paranormal experience and had been touched by history in a profound and unexpected way. But Carly swore to herself that no matter how profound the experience had been, she was done with haunted prisons and field trips for good. Thank you for joining us on our journey to Eastern State Penitentiary. Be sure to tune in next week as we discuss another terrific location. I'm Carmen Carrion. Remember, you can send me suggestions and stories of haunted places to my email, carmencarrion@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @CarmenCarrion. Go to eeriecast.com to find other terrifying podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. Until next time, be safe out there, until I see you at our next destination.
Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.